Byblos and Beirut. These are Phoenician cities, and very important ones. Now, what the Phoenicians did in particular was this. They planted trading colonies all over the Mediterranean. They began doing this probably about 900 BC. And they created in the process one of the first great commercial empires that the world had ever seen. In this, they really anticipated the Athenians, they anticipated the Venetians, they anticipated the Dutch. In other words, they were not people who conquered enormous amounts of territory, but they were people who built a commercial empire that was in some ways more valuable and less expensive. Now, where were these colonies? Well, for instance, Carthage. We will be much occupied with Carthage later on when we talk about the Romans, for example, but Carthage was a Phoenician colony. We might think of Massilia. We know that better as Marseille in the south of France. That was another Phoenician colony. There were Phoenician colonies along the coast of Iberia, what we call Spain. There were Phoenician colonies in southern Italy and in Sicily. So the Phoenicians built trading colonies all over the Mediterranean world. And they began slowly but surely, by dint of these communities, stitching that world together, making one kind of cultural basin in the Mediterranean area. This was their great contribution, spreading ideas that had arisen in Mesopotamia and spread through much of the Middle East, now to much of the Mediterranean world as a whole. Now, it's worth saying, too, with respect to these Phoenicians, that they were really intrepid sailors. It's a shame we don't know more about them. It's a shame, for example, we don't know more about their naval technology. For example, by about 600 BC, they had almost certainly circumnavigated Africa. That wouldn't happen again for more than 2,000 years, at least not by someone coming from the Mediterranean basin. By perhaps 450, they had reached the British Isles, the Tin Isles, as they were called in antiquity, probably sailed up to the coast of what we would think of today as Cornwall, southwestern Britain. So the Phoenicians then are one of the small peoples who emerged in this sort of gap left after the Egyptians and Hittites had worn themselves out and before other imperial powers, to whom we'll turn really in our next lecture in more detail, had arisen. By far, however, the most important people who emerged in this brief gap, in this brief moment of opportunity, were the Hebrews. Now, to raise the subject of the history of the Hebrews is to raise one of the most fundamental and foundational issues in all of Western civilization. Though, as we'll see, there's a certain irony in it. We're not going to stress them because of their politics, because of their government, because of their war, because of their diplomacy, because of their economics, but rather because of their religious ideals. Now, we know a lot, and there's a great deal that we don't know. For example, much is shrouded in legend. We're told that a pastoralist by the name of Abraham was told by his God to move his people from Ur of the Chaldees, from Sumer, which we talked about in an earlier lecture, up to a land that God would show him. Now, that land wound up being roughly what we think of today as Israel, or from another point of view, Palestine. Now, the story tells us, of course, that God was that God bid his people move, and that's perhaps true. But it's also important to say that Abraham was a pastoralist. And in Sumer, you have a land basically of settled agriculturalists, of farmers. There are no places on earth where pastoralists and farmers get along well together. One has only to think, for instance, of the American frontier in the 19th century, the great struggles between the cattlemen and the farmers. So there's probably a sense, you see, that pastoral peoples were less numerous and less powerful, and therefore, well, were invited to leave, but perhaps maybe were induced to leave. And they migrated off to someplace else. They settled in a barren, God-forsaken part of the world, even though God had given it to them. In a very real way, it was like Joseph Smith settling the Mormons in Utah. This was a land, surely, that no one else wanted. So they settled in this new land. What about this Abraham? When did he do this? Well, scholars have confidently dated Abraham everywhere between about 2000 and about 1550 BC. We can sort of build very convincing cases for a whole series of dates. Suffice it to say that this begins during what we would have called the dynastic period at Ur, the dynastic period in Sumer, and then extends a little bit beyond that period. Now, once the Hebrews had settled in the land that had been pointed out to them, in the land that would become Israel, they were very much divided up. They didn't come as a single people who were firmly unified, who had a firm government, who had a firm structure of authority, a firm structure of organization around themselves. They settled in small groups, in small bands. If one reads, for example, the early books of the Hebrew Scriptures, about which we'll have a lot more to say in just a minute, one notices, for example, the names of large numbers of families. and struggles and contentions and rivalries and jealousies and envies among those families. And one also notices that they weren't the only people about the place, that they were also struggling with other small groups of people. None so powerful that they could conquer the Hebrews not so powerful that they could conquer